Jordan hurried down the castle corridors with Cord and Taggart at his side. His company of guards moved before and behind him, making sure that everyone kept a respectful distance. Gawain and his guards had done their best to open a route for him, but there was chaos everywhere. Rumors were spreading like wildfire, half of them contradictory, and no one knew where they stood anymore. No one wanted to commit themselves to anything until they were sure which faction was going to come out on top. And of course, there were always those ready to take advantage of the chaos for their own reasons. A good many people wanted to swear allegiance to Jordan when they saw the crown on his head, but he didn't have time to stop. He just smiled, waved, and kept on running. A growing crowd followed on behind his guards. Jordan tried to step up the pace and found he couldn't.
Victor!
Air was burning in his lungs, and his breath rattled in his throat. The stitch ached in his side, but he didn't dare stop for a breather.
Victor!
He didn't think he'd be able to get started again if he did. And besides, Lewis could still get to the hall before he did.
Victor!
Hmm? What?
Look! Down the hall!
Oh, damn.
Jordan's skin began to crawl. The wooden wall panels were slowly writhing and twisting as though they were alive. As Jordan watched, part of the wall split open like a rotten fruit and something dark and spindly with too many legs darted out into the corridor.
I've got this in my...
What? I was closer.
Fair enough, but the next one's mine.
I fear there's going to be more than enough for the both of you. Let's go, quickly now.
Someone else must have opened a gateway. The Unreal's broken through again.
That's all we need. Who's behind it this time? It can't be Dominic.
I don't know. This new one can't have been open long, but each time a gateway is opened, it gets that much harder to close. Our best bet is to get you to the throne, so you can use the stone to control the Unreal.
Jordan was too short of breath to answer, so he just nodded and kept on moving. Strange lights appeared on the air. Shadows on the walls twisted and turned into creatures that had no discernible form. Paintings smeared inside their canvases, spelling out ancient curses and unreal landscapes. Visions flickered at the corners of everyone's eyes, always just on the edge of becoming clear. Jordan stared straight ahead and ran on, refusing to stop for anything. Finally, they rounded a corner, and there were the huge double doors that led into the Great Hall. And standing before the doors were Prince Louis, Ironheart, and a company of heavily armed guards. Jordan and his party came to a sudden halt, and for a moment the corridor was still and quiet.
You took your time getting here, Victor. As soon as I discovered you had Dad's will, I knew it wouldn't be long before you headed back here with the crown and the seal. You're really very predictable, you know. Especially since I introduced a spy into your people.
Oh, hell, not another one. Who is it this time?
No one important. But someone with access to everything that was going on. After all, no man keeps secrets from his wife, does he? Guards!
Two guards hustled forward the Lady Emma.
Oh, Emma.
I had to do it. Louis knew so much already, and he had Ironheart and the monk... You couldn't hope to win. I had to go with the winner. He promised me he'd protect you, Gawain, if I agreed to keep him informed of your plans. I did it for you, Gawain.
Trusting little soul, isn't she? Now then, Victor, you let me have the crown and the seal, and I'll let you live.
Do I look crazy? You want it? You come and take it. Or aren't you as brave without your tame sorcerer to back you up? Where is the monk, anyway? Run off and left you in the lurch, has he?
He's around. Keeping busy. I'm afraid you don't understand the realities of the situation, Victor. Either you hand over the crown and the seal right now, or I'll have my people kill the Lady Emma. Slowly and painfully, right before your eyes. You see, I've been studying you, Victor. You got soft in exile. Now, do as you're told. Or else.
Jordan glanced quickly at Gawain, but the knight was staring fixedly at Emma. Jordan scowled desperately, torn so many ways he didn't know what to do for the best. But of course, there was only one thing he could honorably do. He pulled the heavy gold ring off his finger and hefted it, sadly, in his hand.
The royal seal. It's all yours, Louis.
I always told everybody how weak you were.
Louis barely saw the ring as it flew directly into his left eye. Jordan and Taggart leaped forward almost as one toward the two guards holding Lady Emma. And then Ironheart's steel fist lashed out with murderous speed and crushed the back of Emma's skull.
No!
Ironheart Reinhardt's severed hand fell limply to the floor. No blood spurted from the armor-clad stump. Jordan barely had time to comprehend the scene before Lewis threw himself into the battle. Sparks flew as their swords clashed and danced apart. Their guards milled around them, more interested in killing their enemies and settling old scores than in protecting their leaders. Sir Gawain knelt beside his dead wife and held her hand, oblivious to anything else. Cord swung his mace with awesome strength and speed. But the knight took even the most punishing blows with virtual indifference. But while Cord kept Ironheart busy, Taggart went to work on him with her Balefire sword. The crackling white fire sliced into the dull steel, whittling away at Ironheart like a dull knife on a stubborn block of wood. Gaping rents appeared in the armor, but Ironheart took no hurt from them, and no blood ran. Taggart's hackles rose as she hacked away at the stubbornly advancing knight and wondered crazily if he could die. She aimed higher for his neck. Ironheart's head fell from his body. The suit of armor fell heavily to the floor and never moved again. Lewis's guards lost their confidence as they saw their champion brought down, and the looks on Cord's and Taggart's faces didn't help. They dropped their weapons and surrendered. Only Lewis fought on, raining blows on the grimly defending Jordan. He continued to back away and wished he had his flare pellets with him. Even a smoke pellet would have helped. Lewis was strong, fresh, and very experienced with a sword. Jordan was none of those things. So far, he was holding his own, bar a few minor scratches, but he was tiring quickly, and Lewis knew it. Jordan kept backing away, his mind working furiously. All he had to do was say the word, and Taggart or Cord or any of his guards would rescue him. But if he did that, they'd lose all respect for him. It's not enough for a future king to be brave and strong. He must be seen to be brave and strong. Unfortunately, right now, Lewis was the stronger. Jordan suddenly remembered an earlier fight when Gawain took on Dark John Sutton. Dark John had all the advantages, but Gawain beat him anyway, because Dark John was a duelist and Gawain was a soldier. Jordan grinned as he remembered Gawain's winning trick. Jordan blocked a strike by Lewis and their weapons locked, bringing them face to face. Jordan nodded to his guards. With a bit of luck, they'd all been too far away to notice that he beat Lewis by spit, not swordsmanship. He rooted among the bodies of the fallen guards till he found the royal seal and slipped the ring back on his finger.
Pardon me, Your Highness, but I think you ought to take a look at this.
Jordan moved over to where she was kneeling beside Ironheart's headless body.
What is... Ugh.
Taggart was holding the head she'd found inside the featureless helm. Jordan's stomach heaved. The head looked as though it had been dead for some time. Half the face was already eaten away by decay.
Exactly. Ugh. Lewis's sorcery was more twisted than anybody could have imagined.
How could he have done such a thing?
I doubt we'll ever know the answer. Lewis might have told us, but he's dead.
There's still the monk.
Yes, there's always the monk.
Jordan looked around him and saw Gawain was still kneeling beside the body of his dead wife.
I'm sorry. I thought I could save her. I did try, Gawain.
It's my own fault. I shouldn't have left her alone for so long. She was always easily led. Let's go, Victor. You have a throne waiting for you.
Do you think I care about that now?
Yes, you have to. Because if you don't, Emma and everyone else who's followed you will have died for nothing. Now go in there and take the throne, Victor. It's waiting for you.
Yes, I suppose it is. There isn't anyone left to stand between me and it any longer.
Taggart looked at Jordan.
The gateway, Victor! We forgot about the gateway!
She stepped forward and threw open the double doors. Jordan stepped in beside her, and his stomach lurched sickly as he saw the new gateway. Midway between the doors and the throne, the monk hung unsupported on the air. His robe was flung open, revealing a surging mass of light and color. There was no trace of a body within the robe, or that there ever had been. The monk had become a living gateway through which the unreal could enter the real world. Creatures out of a nightmare dripped in a steady stream from inside the monk's robe, like maggots from a rotting carcass. They fell to crawl, slide, and scuttle across the floor, and there were always more close behind. A gusting wind blew from the gateway, hot and prickly and rank with burning ammonia. Jordan stared in horror at the unreal that had already taken root in the Great Hall. horrid creatures scuttled up and down the walls and clung upside down to the ceiling, feeding delicately on tiny morsels of fresh meat. Blood dripped from the ceiling in a steady stream. The throne sat intact upon its dais, untouched by all the madness, but a barrier of seething thorns had grown up around the dais, sealing it off. Jordan looked helplessly at Taggart.
I can't do anything to stop this madness until I get to the stone, and I need an army at my back just to reach it. What am I going to do, Kate?
Only one thing we can do, Victor. We'll have to destroy the gateway. You did it once before.
That was different. This time the gateway's aware and intelligent and unreal. The monk's got to be unreal.
Right. I always thought he was, but I wasn't even allowed to run tests on him as long as he was under Lewis's protection. We've got to stop him, Victor. The balance here shifts too far. Castle Midnight will become one huge gateway through which the unreal can run loose in the world.
Jordan swallowed hard and wished there was somewhere he could run to and still be safe. But as long as the gateway was open, nowhere would ever be really safe. He looked quickly around him. Roderick and the guards stood clustered at the main doors, their faces white with shock and horror. But Cord, Taggart, and Gawain stood calm and ready to back him up. Their confidence gave him strength, and he nodded abruptly.
Right! Everyone, we're going into the hall. You'll have to try and hold off the unreal while I make a dash for the stone. Stay close together, watch each other's backs, and if you get a chance at the monk, take it. You might not get another. All right, my friends, let's do it!
He moved forward into the hall, and the unreal surged toward him in a monstrous tide. Misshapen creatures that had no place in the waking world boiled across the floor, and Jordan's guards met them with flashing swords. The tide faltered and broke against the unflinching steel, and Jordan and his people pressed forward. Gawain fought at Jordan's left, his axe glowing bright as the sun. Taggart fought at his right. Her balefire sword spit and crackled as it hewed through flesh and bone alike. Behind them, Cord threw away his mace. He pulled out of nowhere a huge and terrible warhammer. The solid steel head alone had to weigh at least 20 pounds, and it was set on the end of 5 feet of polished oak. An ordinary man couldn't even have hefted it, but Cord swung the hammer as though it was all but weightless. Cord stood his ground and let them come to him. He felt no anger toward them. They were his brothers in a way, born like him of random chaos and unreality, without mother or father, sprung adult and fully formed into a world that was forever alien to them. Cord looked like a man and felt like a man, but he had never made the mistake of believing himself to be a man. He was a whim made flesh and blood, a possibility given form and motion, nothing more. He was unreal, and a traitor to his own kind, perhaps. But still he fought on, guarding the back of a man he'd come to admire, and a woman he might have loved if he'd been real. Things that looked horribly like men crawled up out of the cracks in the floor. Something huge and dark scuttled lightly down the wall and dropped onto a guard. Gossamer strands of pink and purple drifted on the air and wrapped themselves around the fighters, tightening inexorably into glistening cocoons that crushed and devoured their contents. One whole wall became a vast inhuman face. A dozen men looked into its great golden eyes and went insane from what they saw there. And still, Jordan and his people struggled ever closer to the throne. Sir Gawain fought tirelessly, his axe falling and rising with grim efficiency. He gave no thought to anything save the struggle, and blood ran down his face like tears. With Emma's death, all his emotions had run out of him, save for a simple, cold need for revenge. Nothing else mattered. Nothing mattered but killing the monstrous things that were responsible for all the evil in Castle Midnight. His axe rose and fell, and the creatures of the unreal fell back before him. Gawain cut them down and moved on to the next, feeling nothing, nothing at all. Taggart fought at Prince Victor's side and smiled savagely as her balefire sword sliced through every monstrosity that walked or crawled or flew within her reach. Nothing got past her to strike at Victor, though many tried, and a slow, steady pride burned within her. Even in the midst of blood and carnage, she still had time to find a small smile at how fast her feelings toward Victor had changed. He'd not been a bad sort before his exile, just weak and easily led by the wrong people. She hadn't cared much about him then, one way or the other. But the man who'd emerged from the chaos of King Malcolm's death had been of a much finer sort. A true prince of the blood, worthy to be king. And a man Kate Taggart was growing increasingly fond of. She smiled again, and then put the thought firmly out of her mind. She'd think about that later. Assuming there was a later. She fought on, sweat running down her face and soaking her chest and sides as a grinding fatigue grew slowly inside her. The Balefire was a constant drain on her strength, but she didn't dare give it up for an ordinary sword. It was the only advantage she had. She just hoped her magic would last long enough for Victor to reach the stone. If it didn't, then perhaps everything they'd been through had been for nothing after all. Roderick cut and thrust with his sword and wondered how everything could have gone so horribly wrong. His plan had seemed so perfect in the beginning, so simple and straightforward. But first, the little things had got out of control, and then the bigger things, until finally he had come to realize that he was only a part in someone else's plan. A bitter resignation was all that kept him going now. That, and a burning hatred for the vile creatures that swarmed around him. Whatever he might have been and done, the castle was his home and always had been. And while he might not fight for a prince or a king, he'd fight to preserve his home from the foulness that threatened it. Jordan swung his sword with an aching arm, stumbling and sliding on the blood-soaked floor. His blows were getting slower and weaker, and his lungs burned in his chest as he fought for air. He was an actor, not a soldier, and he knew he couldn't last much longer. His will and determination were as strong as ever, but there was a limit beyond which even they couldn't drive his failing body. He glanced about him as he fought, trying to see how the battle went, but the hall had become a confused mess of struggling bodies that defied any clear interpretation. There seemed to be no end to the unreal, and no matter how many creatures fell, there were always more to take their place. His guards were fighting fiercely, but one by one they were falling beneath bloody fangs and claws and not rising again. His colleagues around him were still fighting well, but he could see strain and fatigue stamped clearly on their faces. The throne on its dais stood safe and secure, and the thorn barrier that surrounded it was only a few feet away. But it slowly occurred to Jordan that he might not have enough strength left to take him those last few feet. He worked his way over to Taggart, and they fought side by side.
Kate! How much magic have you got left?
Not much, Victor! I was trained as a steward, not a sorcerer!
Think you've got enough left for one good blast? Enough to clear me a path through the thorns to the dais!
Taggart briefly looked at the gap between them and the throne.
Maybe! But that would take everything I've got! It'd be a hell of a risk! You'd only get one chance at the throne, and then the creatures would be all over you! You sure you want to risk that?
Yeah. If you've got a better idea, I'd love to hear it!
All right! You're on! But you'd better be right about this, Victor! Because if I get killed here, I'll never forgive you!
They shared a quick smile, and then Taggart focused her awareness inward, calling up the light of life that burned within her. It was already seriously diminished from what it should be, but there was enough left to do the job, if she was lucky. She dismissed her shimmering sword and concentrated all her power for one last controlled blast. The creatures in its path were incinerated in a moment, as though they had never been, and the thorn barrier exploded in a mass of flames. When the light died away again, a pathway to the throne stood clear and open.
That's it! Gawain, follow me!
Jordan and Gawain sprinted down the narrow aisle Taggart had opened up in the barrier. Jordan scrambled up onto the marble dais, and then a barbed tentacle shot from the side.
We're almost there. Grab my hand.
A moment later, they were both crouching beside the empty throne. Unreal life boiled all around the dais, but none of it dared draw near the stone that lay beneath the throne. Jordan pulled at the throne's arm. It didn't budge in the least. He looked at Sir Gawain.
All right, Gawain! How do we get to the stone?
Just say the words, Your Highness. The old words, handed down by tradition. Then the throne gives up the stone, which rolls forward.
I know all that, Gawain, but what exactly are the damn words?
Sir Gawain looked at him blankly, and then shook his head in disgust.
I'm sorry, Victor. Of course you don't know the words. The king would have told the regent, but it was up to him to pass them on to whoever was designated as heir. Stand back, Victor. I'll get you the stone.
He shifted his hold on the axe to use it as a lever. The haft went under the throne, but nothing seemed to move. The throne rustled and shifted, but it didn't lift an inch. Gawain put his back into it. Muscles corded on his arms and back, and he grinned mirthlessly as his face grew taut and strained. The axe head glowed brightly, its magic negating the spells that protected the throne. The throne was suddenly on its side, revealing the ancient stone.
It's yours, Victor.
Oh, well done, Gawain. Now what do I do?
Spill your blood on the stone and swear allegiance to it as king. Then the stone will accept you and give you power over the unreal.
Jordan looked at him blankly.
Oh my God.
What is it? What's the matter?
I thought I just had to say the right words. Once I had the crown and seal, I never thought.
What is it, Victor? We don't have much time.
I can't do it, Gawain.
What do you mean you can't? You've got to.
I mean I can't do it. I don't have any blood. I'm Jordan, not Victor.
Gawain looked at him, and a slow horror crept across his face.
You fool! You've damned us all!
Jordan looked back across the hall. Taggart had fallen to the floor. Cord stood over her and fought to keep the unreal at bay with his warhammer. Roderick had been backed up against a wall and was fighting a dogged but losing battle against a crowd of slithering, shape-shifting creatures. Of the 50 or so guards who had followed Jordan into the hall, barely a dozen remained, battling bravely in small clumps against overwhelming odds. The unreal was growing stronger. More creatures crawled up out of the cracks in the floor or stepped through the walls or fell from the ceiling. The light pulsing within the monk's open robe was blindingly bright, and the power of the unreal was almost a physical presence in the air. Jordan swayed unsteadily on his feet and shook his head to clear it. There had to be something he could do. There had to be something.
Jordan, why did you do it? Why did you kill him? Did you want to be king so badly you were ready to risk destroying us all?
It wasn't like that. I never meant it. He was mad, just like his brothers. I thought I could save the kingdom. He was crazy, Gawain. He was going to start a war that would have destroyed Redheart.
He had the blood. And without that, we're all going to die anyway.
He turned away, his face a mask of despair. Jordan felt sick. Was Gawain right? Had he really killed Victor only because he wanted to be king himself? It didn't matter. It was too late now for doubts and recriminations. He'd given it his best shot, and it hadn't been good enough. He'd failed his friends and failed the kingdom. He looked slowly around him. A dozen creatures swarmed over Daemon Cord. Two creatures grabbed his warhammer and tore it out of his weakening grip. Somehow, Cord surged to his feet again, flailing about him with his fists. He was covered in blood, much of it his own. The unreal milled around him, and still Cord fought on, trying to get back to protect the steward. Catriona Taggart was on her feet, though she knew she was used up. She cut desperately about her with a sword she'd snatched from a dead guard's hand. The unreal closed in around her, and she swayed drunkenly on her feet as she struggled to keep her sword arm steady. That final blast of balefire had taken too much out of her, and she knew it. The unreal knew it, too. She could see Cord fighting to get back to her side, but there were too many creatures between them. She risked a quick glance at the throne and saw Victor and Gawain standing over the stone. She tried to smile bravely. Prince Victor had got to the stone. At least she wouldn't have died in vain. Blood ran down into her eyes, and she lifted a shaking hand to wipe it away. A glistening black creature with a barbed spine lashed out at her while she was distracted. She tried to get up again and couldn't. Something with blood-red eyes and needled teeth stooped over her.
Kate!
Jordan saw Taggart go down. He knew he couldn't get to her in time. All his rage and guilt burned within him, and he stretched out a desperate hand toward her. Jordan looked disbelievingly at the flames licking harmlessly around his hand. Victor had the fire magic, not him. He was just an actor who knew a few conjuring tricks. But that was no longer true. That jet of flame had come from his own hand. He could feel the fire burning within him, waiting to be used. A bright burning flame to sear the world clean of foulness and evil. He looked up at the monk, floating high above the violence below, and realized for the first time just how vulnerable the creature was. He raised his hand and smiled grimly at the gateway of the unreal.
Burn in hell, monk!
There was nothing left where the monk once was. A swath of burning cloth fell down onto the heads of the unreal creatures below. The gateway was closed. Jordan slowly realized that Gawain was tugging at his arm.
Jordan, the stone! Swear your oath to the stone before another gateway opens.
What are you talking about, Gawain? I told you, I'm Jordan. I don't have any blood.
You have the fire magic.
I don't know how I did that. I don't know where it came from.
It comes from the glamour spell Roderick put on you. It must have. It made you a physical duplicate of Victor. An exact physical duplicate. Since Victor had blood, so do you.
Jordan gaped at Gawain and then spun around to face the stone. The Unreal seemed to realize what was about to happen and redoubled their attack.
Hold them off just a little longer, men! For Castle Redheart!
The remaining guards fought desperately to hold back the creatures for just a few more moments. Jordan nicked the palm of his left hand with his sword edge, and a few spots of blood fell onto the top of the ancient stone. He leaned forward to place his palm on the stone. If this didn't work, he just hoped his death would be quick.
I swear allegiance to the stone and to the kingdom of Redheart!
Power surged through him, and for a timeless moment he could see everywhere in Castle Midnight. He could see the Unreal swarming through the rooms and corridors, appearing through hundreds of minor gateways. Everywhere in the castle, guards and sorcerers and men and women armed with whatever they could find fought to hold back the endless tide of savagery. They fought well and bravely, but they were still losing. Jordan called upon his power. Tall, gelatinous creatures were chasing a weaponless guard down a corridor. The creatures turned to dust and blew away, caught in the drafts of the old castle. Something gray and dusty was sitting over a pile of bloody bones. It melted away into the floor, turned pure as water. Two chitinous beasts were forcing themselves into the locked stables outside. Their segmented bodies split apart and burst into flames where they stood. Cracks in walls and floors flowed together and were gone, and shadows lay still and undisturbed. The Unreal disappeared, and the world became sane again. In the Great Hall, the battling creatures were gone. The darkness overhead disappeared, and the ornate ceiling returned. The creatures of the Unreal were banished, and with them went Daemon Kord, who had known all along that this would happen, and had fought with all his strength and courage to help bring it about. A slow, peaceful silence settled over the hall. The handful of survivors knelt and bowed to their new king.
You're going to need this, my liege.
Gawain took hold of the throne, still sitting on its side. The throne back in position, Jordan sat down on it hesitantly. Sir Gawain of Tower Rouge knelt before him and bowed his head.
Redheart has a king again. Long live King Victor of Redheart!
And only Jordan saw the wink that Gawain gave him. Jordan sat slumped on his throne, happy to have seen the last of the courtiers gone. If he'd known being made king would involve all these bloody ceremonies, he'd have thought twice about it. Jordan usually enjoyed a good ceremony, if only for the theater of the occasion, but it felt rather different when you had to sit at attention all the way through, for hours on end. He knuckled his bleary eyes. It had been a long day, and it showed few signs of getting any shorter. For all practical purposes, he'd been the rightful king from the moment he made his oath to the stone, but both law and tradition had to be followed, exactly, if he wanted the support of his people. First, he'd had to summon the entire court so that the nobility could make their individual oaths of fealty to the new king. A few people had been conspicuous by their absence. Jordan had ordered them banished, and wasn't surprised to learn that they had anticipated this and were already well on their way. Apparently, they had been close associates of either Lewis or Dominic and didn't trust in Victor's forgiving nature. Jordan didn't blame them. The ceremonies had dragged on and on, and in the end, Jordan had stopped trying to follow them. Instead, he dozed with his eyes open and smiled and nodded when he felt like it, which wasn't often. If the three princes had had to put up with this all their lives, it was no wonder they'd gone crazy. But finally, the ceremonies had ground to an end. The hall was quiet, the courtiers were gone, and only the really important people remained. Jordan sat up a little straighter and tried to settle his crown more comfortably on his head.
The damn thing was heavier than it looked, and it was giving him a headache. Sir Gawain stood at his left, beside the throne. Jordan's first act as king had been to make Gawain his champion. The courtiers had taken one look at the murderous axe in Gawain's hand and had hurriedly agreed that this was an altogether excellent idea. Count Roderick stood directly before the throne. He'd said no more than the bare minimum necessary all through the ceremonies, which hadn't surprised Jordan at all. What Roderick had to say, and no doubt there was a great deal of it, could only be said in private. Beside Roderick stood Count William and his wife, the Lady Gabrielle. Jordan had been keeping a careful eye on the ex-regent. If there was to be any real threat to his succession, that was where it was going to come from. William had established a nice little power base for himself as regent, and it was just possible that he might not want to hand it over, particularly to a man he'd already declared to be unfit to rule. But so far, he'd minded his manners and said all the right things in all the right places. Jordan smiled slightly. One of the first things he'd done had been to split up William's troops and put them under the command of men loyal only to the king, just in case. And finally, standing at the right of his throne was the steward, Catriona Taggart. She had one arm in a sling, and the bandage around her head made her look both raffish and endearingly vulnerable. She and Jordan had been sharing little secret smiles all through the ceremonies. Jordan sighed happily and smiled again. One of the other things he'd done was to banish the Lady Heather from court and send her home to Cahalamar. Not only was she a ruthless little baggage, but she'd known Victor far too well for Jordan's peace of mind. And with her gone, it was only natural that the new king would turn his attention elsewhere. He grinned at Taggart, and she grinned back. Jordan thought he handled that situation rather well.
Now that the ceremonies are over, I think you and I should have a little talk, Your Majesty. In private?
Do you? I don't.
He watched interestedly as Roderick's face went an entertaining shade of purple.
Whatever you have to say, Roderick, just go right ahead and say it. No need to be bashful. You're among friends here.
Very well. We made an agreement, you and I, on what would happen once you were king. You gave me your word.
So I did. I agreed that you should be my chief advisor, and so you shall. But it seems to me that the word advisor has a very specific meaning. I'll always welcome your advice, Roderick, but whether I follow it or not will be my decision, not yours. As long as you bear that in mind, I see no reason why we shouldn't have a long and mutually profitable relationship.
There are things I could tell the court that they don't know.
I imagine you could. But do you think it would be in your best interest to do so?
Roderick stood very still for a moment, his gaze fixed on Jordan's. Gawain stirred restlessly. In the end, Roderick bowed stiffly to the throne.
I shall do my best to provide you with good advice, Your Majesty. I think you're going to need it. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a great deal of work that must be attended to.
Yes, of course. They're burying Argent soon, aren't they?
Yes. Do you object to my attending the funeral, Your Majesty?
No, he was your friend. And I think perhaps he was more sinned against than sinning. Perhaps he'll be at peace now.
I hope so, Your Highness. Good day.
William looked quizzically at Jordan.
He'd make a dangerous enemy, sire. He has a great deal of influence in both political and economic circles.
I know. That's why he'll make a good advisor once I've got him settled in.
Is that what you have in mind for me, sire?
Why not? My years in exile have left me out of touch when it comes to the day-to-day running of the kingdom. I can use your experience and support. My father trusted you. He said you were an honest man. Every king needs at least one advisor he can rely on to tell him the truth, whether he wants to hear it or not. What do you say?
William bowed formally.
I would be honored, Your Majesty. There was a time I thought you unworthy to rule like your brothers. I was wrong. I give you my word that I shall serve you faithfully in all things for as long as you have need of me.
Thank you. Now, my friends, we have one last matter to discuss. The most important of all. Who killed my father?
The question hung unanswered on the silence. William finally stirred slightly, and all eyes went to him.
As regent, I ordered a full investigation into King Malcolm's death. Under the steward's direction, the body was carefully examined by castle surgeons. There was no trace of poison in the body, nor any sign of foul play. There was no sign of struggle in his chambers. As far as we can tell, he died peacefully in his sleep. The suddenness of his death made it seem suspicious, but truth be told, he was not a young man, Your Majesty, and death comes to us all sooner or later.
Yes, that's what we were supposed to think. But his demise was too convenient for too many people for it to have been a natural event. So, I've been thinking about who stood to gain most by his death. Louis and Dominic spring to mind, but Malcolm's end was too subtle for it to have been either of them. My brothers were many things, but subtle was not one of them. Then there was you, Sir Regent. But everyone said you were honest, and you made no attempt to seize power for yourself when you could have. That leaves one other person who wanted the king dead, and had the means and opportunity. You, Gabrielle.
They all looked at Jordan as though he was mad. Gabrielle held her head high and stood a little closer to her husband.
Of all the people I've spoken to, you were our family's most outspoken critic. You hated Louis and Dominic, despised me as weak, and abhorred our father's preoccupation with war. Over and over again, I heard you say that our line was corrupt, that none of us were fit to hold the throne. It was an obsession with you, Gabby. You believe that Redheart needed an honest man as king if it was to survive. And who do we all know that everyone agrees is honest beyond question? Your husband, Count William. I don't think for a minute that he knew anything about this. If he'd have even suspected you meant to murder your father, he'd have stopped you. So you didn't tell him. You waited until you and Dad were alone together. And then you killed him. With him gone, William would become regent, and after you had time to work on him, eventually he would have taken the throne by popular acclaim. If the will hadn't gone missing, and with it the clue to the crown and seal, your plan might have worked. William would have been king, and you would have been queen. All for the best reasons, of course.
Tell him he's a liar, Gabrielle! Tell him!
How could I have killed Dad? There wasn't a mark on him or a trace of poison in his body.
You used your magic, your air magic. You use it so rarely people tend to forget you have air magic by your blood. You used it to suck the breath out of his lungs, just like I saw you use it against the unreal birds at court.
All right. You worked it out. What are you going to do about it?
William looked at her, and all the color went out of his face.
What are you saying, Gabrielle?
There's no need for you to be involved in this, dear. I killed Father. It was all my idea and no one else's. Redheart needed a strong king.
And you as queen.
Of course. But what are you going to do, Victor? If you put me on trial, it would be a major scandal. It could even lead to civil war, and you can't afford that. Not when your own grasp on the throne is still so precarious.
He was my friend. Malcolm was my friend. How could you do it, Gabrielle?
My father never had a friend in his life. He was pleasant enough to you because he needed your counsel. But if he'd ever found out that you and I were cousins, he'd have annulled our marriage without a second thought.
So that's why.
Well, Victor, what are you going to do?
I can't let you stand trial. You're right about that. And I can't banish you either. You wouldn't go without your husband, and I need him. I could have you killed, but William would never forgive me. So, you'll remain here in the castle in your quarters under unofficial house arrest. William will be your guard. For the rest of your life, you will never leave your quarters or talk with anyone other than your husband. Break my rules, and I will have no choice but to have you killed.
No need for threats, Victor. I accept your conditions. It's more than I expected. You might turn out to be a worthy king after all.
She turned away and headed unhurriedly for the doors. William looked at Jordan. He nodded, and William bowed quickly and went after his wife. They left the court together.
Together.
Jordan slumped back in his throne again and stared around the empty hall. It seemed very large and echoing with everybody gone. He'd never really thought about what he was going to do once he got this far. He hadn't had a chance. Everything had happened so quickly. One day he was just another traveling player, wondering where his next meal was coming from, and then suddenly he was part of a conspiracy to impersonate a prince of the realm. And not very long after that, he was playing the part for real. He didn't regret killing Victor. The alternative would have put too many lives at risk. But that was as far as his thinking had gone. He had no training in politics or the art of ruling. His only experience of courts had been acting before them. And what he knew about enforcing the laws of the land could probably be engraved on his left thumbnail without undue difficulty. But he could learn. He had time and good advisors. He looked at Gawain and grinned at him.
How does it feel to be a king's champion, Gawain?
At my age, somewhat dangerous. Not that I don't appreciate the honor, but I would have settled for a less risky position. Like collecting taxes single-handed, or fighting a dragon with both my arms tied behind my back.
Moan, moan, moan. I've got to have someone in this court I can turn my back on without wincing, and you're it.
Jordan's smile suddenly faded, and he looked seriously at his champion.
Gawain, you once swore an oath to protect a certain man. I killed him. Where does that leave us?
The man who died was not worthy of my oath. I still serve and protect the true Prince Victor.
Am I supposed to understand any of that?
No, not particularly. Thank you, Sir Gawain. Now, if you don't mind, I'd like a private word or two with my steward.
Of course, sire. I'm so glad you agreed to return from exile, Your Majesty. You've been a new man since you returned to court.
Now, what was that all about?
Oh, nothing important. I need to talk to you, Kate.
Taggart smiled and stepped forward to sit on the arm of his throne.
You can always count on me, Victor. My life is yours.
Jordan grinned back at her and slipped an arm around her waist.
I was hoping you'd say something like that.
Blood and Honor is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 1993, Simon R. Green, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, David Coyne, Yasmin Toison, Andy Clemens, Richard Rowan, Scott McCormick, Tim Getman, Michael John Casey, James Konacek, Michael Glenn, Eric Messner, Peter Stray, Colleen Delaney, Katie Foster, Nanette Savard, Elizabeth Jernigan, Christopher Graybill, Danny Gabigan, Corey James, Joe Brack, M.B. Van Dorn, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Book adapted for graphic audio by Dan Sondak. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. The Forest Kingdom Saga theme was composed by Dan Sondak. Additional original music by Johann Detweiler and Dan Sondak. If you enjoyed Blood and Honor, be sure to look for R.A. Salvatore's Demon Wars Saga. Available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220. Or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of other thrilling titles in Graphic Audio.
Kyler Stern has rejected the assassin's life.
We've got a contract for you. 50,000 Gunders for one kill, Kyler. With that much, you can take Aline annually anywhere. You'll have done the world a good turn, and you'll never have to work again. It's just one last job.
There's always one last job. I'm finished.
The God King's successful coup has left Kyler's master, Derzo Blint, dead and buried.
Oh, I've been having a little party, celebrating.
What are you celebrating?
Derzo Blint is dead!
Tired of it all, he is starting over. New city, new friends, and a new profession.
Kyler, there are always going to be people so bad that we think they deserve to die. I don't know. What I do know is what you've told me about what killing has done to your soul. No matter what good it seems to do for the world, it destroys you. I can't watch that, Kyler. I won't. I care about you too much.
All right. We should be able to leave in the morning.
But the beckoning will of the Shadow soon comes to call on Kyler once again.
Logan's alive. He's in the hall.
Logan's alive?
Every day, the chances that Logan will be discovered get worse.
You want me to break into the hole and save Logan?
I want you to rescue Logan. And then I want you to assassinate the God King.
Kyler is faced with an agonizing choice. Will he give up the Way of Shadows and live in peace? Or will he risk everything by taking on the ultimate hit?
Look at yourself! I know this hit is impossible. I'm sending you after a god. But if anyone in the world can do it, it's you. You were made for this, Kyler. Some things are bigger than your happiness. You can give hope to an entire nation.
It'll only cost me everything.
Will Kyler see the light when his world is shrouded in shadows? Find out in Shadow's Edge, the thrilling second part of the Night Angel trilogy. Available now in graphic audio.
It's good to have you back, my friend.
It's bad to be back.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.